You are listening to an SAFM podcast, 104 to 107 nationwide. Stream us live on www.safm.co.za or via the SABC Plus app. SABC News, independent and impartial.
In our discussion this morning, I am joined by founder member of the UDF and former cabinet minister Vali Musa and political analyst Sandile Swana as we reflect on what truly is an important day and a huge milestone today, celebrating 30 years of democracy. And thank you both for joining us this morning. I'll start with you, Mr. Musa, and appreciate your time with us this morning. When you reflect on South Africa at 30, how does it make you feel? When you think about how far this country has come and where we find ourselves in 2024, in what is indeed a crucial and hotly contested election year.
Good morning, Sebenzile, and good morning to you, Mr. Sandile Swana, and good morning to the listeners. You know, when I woke up this morning, I said to myself, wow, this is Freedom Day. I'm waking up on Freedom Day. And, you know, maybe I'm old-fashioned. I'm not your age, Sebenzile, but it means it's an emotional thing for me to say I'm waking up on Freedom Day. During those many, many long years of struggle and time when we spent in jail and this and that and whatnot, you know, we used to sing about Freedom Day and dream about Freedom Day. And the day will come when the people of this country will be free to choose their own leaders, will be free to vote without any pressure on them, without any intimidation, in a free and fair election, choose whoever they want to lead us in this country. That day will come. You know, it was like a dream. And, you know, you never knew whether you were just dreaming or hoping, or whether you actually believed that in your lifetime you would see that. So every 27th of April is just a deeply emotional day for me. Here we are as a free nation. We can choose whoever we want. In a few weeks' time, we are going to indeed be doing that. We'll go there as human beings, standing straight up, black and white. There's no qualification as to who can vote and who can't vote.
Yeah.
Anybody can stand anybody can form a political party. So this is a great day for me. And I think it truly is a day for absolute celebration.
In your view, and I'll stay with you, Mr. Musa, just as a follow-up on that. In your view, have we just become a country that has taken for granted all of these rights and the fact that we can talk robustly about the issues of the day, that there is a free press, that people can make a choice and really express themselves and not fear that they may turn up missing tomorrow because they express an unpopular view, which happens in various parts of the continent, elsewhere in the world as well. Have we perhaps quickly forgotten what the cost of this freedom was?
You know, one of the things that our freedom is about, and which our forefathers and everybody fought for, was the right to speak freely. Because remember, in those days, most of us went to jail not because we were doing anything particularly important, just because we were talking what was in our minds, you know? And then you went to jail for that. You were not allowed to publish. And today we do have a situation where you, journalist, you are speaking freely without fear. I mean, the things that you journalists can say about the president and about former presidents, and nothing happens to you. You don't go to jail. You generally, you don't lose your jobs or those sorts of things. And that's what we fought for. I think that people expressing themselves freely, including saying that, look, yes, we are free, but we're not happy. Look at the state of this hospital, or look at the potholes, or look at that. That's what actually freedom is about, so that people can say when they're unhappy about something. They don't have to remain silent. And if we remain silent as a nation about things that we still have to achieve, about things that are not going completely right, about state capture, about anything else, we will be, I think that we would actually not be doing justice to this great freedom that we have. So it is not, I don't think it's being taken for granted. I think it's being used. Of course, one can have comparative examples. You know, when I talk to people, say, for example, we're talking now about freedom of speech. And I say that, you know, in this country, we have greater press freedom and media freedom than almost every other country in the world, including what they call the cradle of democracy, England or the United States, for example. We have greater freedom of expression here. And that is quite a marvelous thing. But, you know, of course, people don't know that. And then the other thing we have, one of the reasons that you find a robust debate in South Africa is that we are one of the few countries, when we drafted this constitution 30 years ago, we included in there, we said it's well and good, people must be able to vote, people must be able to speak freely, etc. But our constitution, right in the opening pages, say, but people must also have water, they must also have homes, their children must have education.
Yeah.
Women must not be treated as inferior human beings, etc., etc. It's got all of those things. Not many. And that's a wonderful thing, because it turns out that this is not just a legal document as such.
Mm.
It is a manifesto of our nation, and so people look at it and say, by the way, we don't have that. And that's important, because it tells us where we want to go to and what is it that we should be asking these political parties about when they ask us to vote. So, you know, I honestly don't think that we're taking our freedom for granted. You know, I just, the one thing I look, of course, SABC has asked me to come onto this program this morning, and then I said, oh, well, by the way, who am I going to be talking to? Then they got Yesebenzile and Kambule. So I thought, wow. You know, I've been interviewed on radio and such things for long before freedom also.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have to pinch myself to say that this is a black person, in fact, an African person, that's going to be asking me questions. And it was just unthinkable in those days.
Mm-hmm.
When you were called to be interviewed on the radio, you know, it was a white reporter that was going to ask you questions. Nice
yeah.
people. But, you know, it was a... So, you know, for me, this is just a wonderful thing where we are today. And,
absolutely.
And that's what it is. It's, for me, it's Freedom Day. It's come.
Yeah, yeah. It gives you the chills as you reflect. In just a moment, we'll bring in political analyst Sandile Swana. And, of course, take your views as well on what this day means for you. And as you wake up this morning, the thoughts and the feelings, really, and what is top of mind as you reflect on South Africa at 30?
Conversations that you connect with and react to. SAFM.
Good morning, Sebenzile. Good morning to the team and the loyal listeners across the country. Regardless of the number of ethnicity, tribe, race that we have in South Africa, the country has been able to achieve and foster unity ever since the dawn of freedom or democracy in the country. That is one thing that we are all proud of. The setback that we are still witnessing is the high level of corruption and crime that all of us, we have a role to play to eliminate it from the country in making Zambia better for all. It's Bram Moro in Bloemfontein.
Let's also hear from Botana on the line from Rosebank. Botana, go for it, please.
Good morning, my sister. 3 decades has become a nightmare for majority of South Africans. We have never expected that the liberators will be coming a criminal enterprise that has destroyed the country brick by brick. The crime is out of control. Unemployment is out of control. Saving at the industrial scale is out of control. The whistleblower has been killed at will. And with impunity, no consequences whatsoever. Those that are privileged are the white people that are enjoying this 3 decades. But black people were subjected to those conditions that are so bad. I mean,
yeah.
if a white person is happy, of course, he'll expect that he's going to be a beneficiary of this democracy. That only for them that are benefiting.
All right,
but I hope that this nightmare will change on the 29th of May.
Mm. Okay, Bodana on the line there from Rosebank. Thank you very much for your call. Let's bring in political analyst Sandile Swana, who's also joining us for the conversation. Mr. Swana, thank you very much for your time this morning. What is a good yardstick, right, to measure how far we've come as a country and how well we've done? To Bodana's point a moment ago, that he says it's a nightmare for some as well. So is it all just based on what people are currently experiencing? And by current, we could talk about the last 10 years, 15 years or so. What actually is a good enough yardstick in your view?
I was asked to meet. Now I forget to unmute. Thank you so much, Bill Sebe.
Sure.
And again, good morning to Comrade Mohamed Vale Moussa of the United Democratic Front and the Mass Democratic Movement.
Good morning, Mr. Swana.
Thank you so much. I must point out, because, you know, I've lived in this country for six decades. I was born in Soweto. And in the process of time, I was one of the enforcers of the sports boycott with the likes of Krishna Edu, Krishma Kedush, Dan Moyo, and others. So I was a student activist. I must first point this out myself on the side of the Mass Democratic Movement. Now, how do you measure progress? Fortunately, and I must commend the South African government, because they produce statistics. Some of those statistics are captured in the National Development Plan Progress Report. Other statistics are captured in various indices that are produced by professional bodies, mm-hmm. others international bodies. So how do we measure that progress? If the question is that, then I say we use those official reports and we use those indices. And with your permission, I will quote from those reports, maybe three or four statistics that tell me where we are. So one of the statistics that we can take into consideration is one, the Transparency International. Which says that corruption one says Transparency International local chapter started tracking its progress on the index 12 years ago. And the latest one, South Africa scored 41, which is the lowest score of the corruption index since 2012. So in terms of the corruption index, since we started being measured, now have the lowest score. In terms of organized crime index, South Africa is now in the top seven countries for organized crime. You know, out of 193 countries who are participating in the index, we are now one of the top crime spots, organized crime spot, where the state itself is becoming a mafia state, and employees of the state, ministers and others, are participating in organized crime. Another index is the infrastructure report card. Suffice to say that on average, our infrastructure, whether it's roads, dams, all sorts of infrastructure that we can, suffice to say that our, by and large, our infrastructure on average scores a D, which means it can collapse at any time overall across the country. Another little thing that we can say is that most math teachers can't do simple sums expected of a 12-year-old in South African public schools. Mm. 80% of grade 6 teachers cannot do the sums that they are supposed to do. That they can't calculate something that a 12-year-old is supposed to do. Then the last thing I want to quote was quoted by Padile Hutla. He says, in the 70s and 80s, for every one black person as a proportion of their population who would complete a B degree, there were 1.2 whites who would complete the same. The corresponding numbers as of 2016, it shows that for every one black person completing a B degree, there are six white persons doing the same. And then the last one, sorry, is that in 2001, we were ranked the number one power utility in the world supplying electricity. It says that South Africa has fallen five places to the 69th in an annual global energy systems ranking in the world, from number one to 69th. So what I will say to you is that, you know, 34 years ago, I was a final year student, 1990, final year student African development economics.
Mm-hmm.
And we were worried at that time that Africa, South Africa, will become like the rest of the African countries in terms of failing to develop and regressing to sometimes below the colonial standards. And these indexes, I'm telling you now, and when you read that report of the progress in terms of the NDP, most of the scores are red, red and orange, red and orange, red. It's hard to find a green in the report. So I am saying that there's a tangibility where during apartheid, I feared when I'm walking around and when I go up and I sleep, I fear that I could be arrested during the night. Today, here where I am in Mulder's Drift, every single night I'm worried about the crimes that can come and do damage to my family.
Mm.
We are affected by criminals who are removing infrastructure, who are raping women. The criminals have got the upper hand. And unfortunately, some members of the state, including ministers, police officers, are also part of the criminal network. So I'll stop there. And I say, for me, the idea that we can vote and journalists, agri-class, could write, who also wrote during apartheid. Some got arrested, some didn't. And certainly I hope to God that I expressed myself fully during apartheid, regardless of the consequences. And that today I continue to do so, to express myself in the way that I did then. So I don't want to be given freedom that has got no tangibilities. I'm worried about that.
Yeah, yeah. Please come in, Mr. Musa, on this. And perhaps if you could also speak to, you know, because 30 years comparatively is young when you think about where we were trying to move the majority of the country from, given where, if you look at, you know, life, quality of life outcomes, pre-democracy to where we are now and how quickly that can in fact be done. But Mr. Swan also makes it a very important point in highlighting some of the very, you know, critical issues and the things that are happening that have in fact stalled and in some parts we've seen ourselves regress in many aspects. Your reflections on that?
Yes, thank you. I think that let me also say Comrade Tswana's expert analysis that he has given us is very, very apt. Because remember that even after 30 years, the one thing that holds, I believe, our nation together is actually the Constitution. It is the stable center of our nation. And it's that very Constitution that refers to the things that he's talking about. For example, Section 26 of the Constitution says everyone has the right to have access to adequate housing.
Mm.
And that is the measure which Mr. Tswana's analysis is using when he says the things that he's saying. It says the next Section 27 says everyone has the right to have access to healthcare services, sufficient food and water, social security, etc., etc. It goes on. So it's absolutely vital that we look at the bare facts and say where we are. Yes, we've got our freedom, but where we are and what is it that is not happening and where is it that we have to go? But the important thing for us to remember is that When we say, yes, we've got the freedom to vote, we've got the freedom of expression, we've got freedom of movement, but what's the value of that if we don't have freedom from crime and freedom from corruption and such things? I think those are not things that one can compare. One cannot say we've got that, but what's the value of that? Because in other words, one would then be saying, okay, we've got crime, we've got corruption, we've got potholes, etc., etc. We'd rather not have this freedom because we've got all of those things. So it's not what anybody would say as such. So the freedoms themselves must be valued for themselves, must be valued intrinsically in themselves, because it is these freedoms and it is this Constitution that gives us as citizens, you and I and everybody else, both the right and the authority to change things as we wish. That's what it does. And as citizens, we need to say that we've got the power. The power belongs to the people. Let's use that to achieve what we want to do. And that's the most important thing. You know, it's not to be undervalued that in this country we have had elections for national government every 5 years, and it has been free and fair, never challenged once, never suggested that the elections are not free and fair. Mm. They've been held on time and in a professional manner, which means that we, the people, we've got the right to do all of those sorts of things, and we need to take that into our hands. But it will be a shame if ever we can say, yes, that's fine, we've got our liberation, but we don't focus on the real issues that make a difference to the lives of people, the education of children, crime, the things that Mr. Swana has spoken about. Those are the real things that makes your life. You know, you can't blame a person who would wake up in the morning and say, but you know, I can't eat the Constitution. You can't blame a person for saying that, because the real things are stuff that we must focus on and talk about all the time.
Perhaps let me stay with you, Mr. Musa, about the issue around human rights as well. I think you made a very powerful point, as you were saying there, that that the freedoms themselves must be intrinsically valued. At a time where I think the globe really is seized with looking at what is happening not only in Palestine, but also what's happening on the continent as well, where we are continuously see violations of human rights, and the fact that in many ways it's still protected here is I think is truly a powerful statement of what has been possible over the last couple of years. Have there though been instances where you have perhaps felt though that there may be a threat to this, where we hear politicians, opposition politicians, or people coming really from various aspects of society making problematic statements which could, if given the platform, if amplified adequately, could perhaps threaten some of these rights that are guaranteed and protected and enshrined in our constitution?
Look, one could say that it is irresponsible for politicians sometimes to speak in a manner which undermines the constitution. But remember that they have a right to do so. And people do have a right to say, we don't like the constitution, we are going to change it. Some people are even saying, I see one of the new parties in the manifesto, they don't only say they are going to amend the constitution, they say they are going to do away with the constitution. They say the very idea of a constitution is a bad idea, because once a government gets elected, that government should be free to do as it wishes. There should be no constitution that limits its powers in any sort of way. So people are free to say all of that. And for the past 30 years, you know, that has been the case. And, you know, I've been involved, as you know, quite deeply in the drafting of the constitution. And we wondered in those days, will this constitution actually survive? You know, how long will it be survive? And I'm pleased that we can today say that it has not been possible for anybody to change the constitution. Mm-hmm. There has been a few consequential amendments here and there, but the Bill of Rights and the essence, the heart of the constitution has remained untouched. And I'm convinced that in the next 30 years, it will still remain unchanged. And the reason for that is that notwithstanding the fact that people would rightfully complain about the things that are going wrong, mm-hmm. but the people of this country do value this constitution, and they are not going to allow anybody to change it. And that's really a fact of the matter. Remember that when the Constitutional Assembly drafted the constitution, it was elected, by the way, it was elected on the 27th of April, 1994. 490 members were elected. People always know that we elected President Mandela's government at the time, but at the same time, we were electing the Constitutional Assembly. These were 490 women and men from all corners of the country, young and old, all provinces equally distributed around the country. Mm-hmm. And the voters, almost 20 million voters that went to vote in April 1994 gave the Constitutional Assembly the mandate to draft and adopt a new democratic constitution. Mm-hmm. That Constitutional Assembly chose Cyril Ramaphosa as the chairperson of the Constitutional Assembly. It took 2 years. And the first thing it decided was, forget about drafting a clever constitution. It's the manner in which we do it that will also determine whether it's legitimate. So that Constitutional Assembly conducted its affairs very transparently, in the open, conducted millions of consultations. And so it's really something that is owned by the people of this country. And it doesn't make me nervous that some or other politician would say, oh, do this, do that, take away that in the Constitution. They're allowed to do so, but I don't believe any such thing is going to happen.
Mr. Sona, let me please ask you to just mute. So there's a bit of feedback coming in. I just want to take JJ in the line from Polokwane, and then I'll come back to you again. JJ, good morning to you. Go for it.
Good morning and happy Freedom Day to you.
And to you.
Let me start by indicating this. We seem not to understand where we come from. Even when we understand where we come from, we seem not to understand the impacts and the journey that we have moved, especially from the ANC side and the mass democratic movement. All the problems that we are having, all without exception, they hinge around education. Because this education that we were fed with is the education that meant nothing and is the education that wanted us to be what we are today and the behavior that we are depicting. The Bantu education. And if we can look back and remember the statements that were mentioned by those who were in charge of the country then, statements such as, and this was uttered by Servuri, when he said a person who can reverse and undo the effect and impact of Bantu education will be a genius. If we can focus on those, then we'll be in a position to understand the origin of the problems that we're having. And if we know that route, then we'll be in a position to address it. Many of the commentators, the academicians, the political analysts, they seem not to understand that they are part and parcel of finding the solutions to that. They speak other language and on the sideline. For instance, I'm a listener of SAFM and the TV. Mr. Sandy Leswana, every day when he speaks, I have never heard him coming up with a solution of the problems that we're having. But he was part and parcel of the journey that we have walked, and he does not understand it. It took 80 years, 80 full years, for the ANC and the mass democratic movement to reach the ballot box. 80 full years. And it took 80 full years for the ANC and the mass democratic movement to make the mouth of the African child to be opened, and we have freedom of speech today. And if
we don't wrap it up for me, please, JJ. Final point.
And criticize one another, we will have problems forever.
All right, JJ in Polokwane. Thank you for your call. Let me ask Mr. Swana to respond to that point. You can unmute now, Mr. Swana. Go for it.
Thank you. First of all, I will say this. Myself and Lumkile Mondi published an article that said that 30 years is enough if we study economic history around the world to move from third world country to first world country. In 2001, under the presidency of Thabo Mbeki and the CEO of Thulani Gcabashe, Eskom became number one in the world. 2001 already. Today, we are number 69 in the world. I was helping TVET College in the Eastern Cape. This TVET College was in the top five. Now they are in the bottom two in South Africa. They've backslid. So what am I saying? I am saying that even in 1990 and in the late 80s, I was concerned about losing what we already have. In the year 2011, to the listener's point, in the year 2011, I was part of a team writing the Youth Development Strategy of South Africa. And I sent a copy, the economic section of the copy in 2011, before Cyril became deputy president, to say, this is what I think needs to happen. I have never received a reply today. A few years ago, I went and sat and went through the data at National Treasury of the things that are going wrong in our procurement system. My estimates were that we're losing between 6 to 12 billion rands a month. And I wrote a letter with the assistance of Krishna, and I sent that letter to Kodongwan at that time. And I've still received no reply with concrete solutions. No reply till today. So I am saying that my actual point in all of this to the Constitution, there are two cases perhaps we need to talk about. One is the Grootboom case on housing, that the Constitutional Court had to decide to tell this government that South Africans have a physical right to housing. And when you read reports, that physical right is not even temporary housing. People are not getting even temporary housing, although the Constitutional Court had to direct this government to provide such housing. On the same note, about 19 different people and parties sued Ramaphosa and said that certain institutions such as police stations, hospitals, schools, and so on must not be subjected to load shedding. Ramaphosa said providing electricity is not his constitutional duty, it is not his duty. And the court had to tell him that he is wrong. Now you have a government that is given duties by the Constitution to give concrete expression to the constitutional rights, and the head of state turns around and says not his job until the court tells him to do so. Palapala is another one where the Constitution was abused and violated, and immoral and illegal, which is still contested in the courts, bulldozing and majoritarianism was used to protect the president from impeachment, of which Mbeki said, if the president is not impeachable, he's done nothing wrong, he should go through the process. Same with Nkandla. Nkandla showed that actually our own comrades have got no respect for the Constitution. And this is the thing we feared. Our people had voting rights in the Cape and in Natal. Black people had voting rights, they had title deeds in certain places, and our schools were equal or better than whites at the time. And that was reversed. So even these things that are there today can be reversed. There's nothing permanent. So we need to be vigilant and advocate that there must be forward, not
And that allows us to segue to what was going to be the final theme, if you will, about how we move forward, right? And what the prospects for the future are. We often speak about a vision for the country. I wonder whether you meet people on the streets and you ask them what they believe the vision for South Africa is. If you'll ever get one coherent answer or the same answer coming from different people, because it feels as though it's here there and everywhere. And perhaps Mr. Musa, I ask you to respond to this first, and maybe that's how it should be, because it's not as though we are all living the same lives or have the same priorities or the same experiences. It really just depends on where you are. But there are certain things that are common across the board. We want to live in a safe country. We want to have access to opportunities. We want to believe that this is the sort of country that people may want to come in and invest in as well, and that you can build something here for generations to come. But it seems as though it's here there and everywhere. So one, what is that vision? How do we craft it, and how do we then build the kind of future, the next 30 years that even yourself, who has a longer history, a longer memory of where we come from, can then look at and say, this is truly what we dreamt about those many years ago. Mr. Musa?
Yeah, thank you, Sebenzile. I respect what Mr. Tswana is saying, and none of what he's saying is inaccurate or unfair or anything of that sort. And I think it's important to highlight those things. However, you know, on a radio show, when one talks about statistics, depends on which expert you've got. You're going to get different correct things highlighted in the statistics. For example, a point has been made here about housing, that even temporary housing haven't been given to people, etc. Another analyst would be talking about the millions of RDP houses that were actually built since 1994 and handed over to homeless people free of charge. So somebody would talk about that and say, look at that. Somebody else would say that before 1994, we only had maybe less than a third of South Africa's population that had access to drinking water. Now it is almost 80% or something like that that have access to drinking water. Somebody would say that a good school has become a bad school now. Somebody else would say, you know, there were so many X number of percentage of children that didn't have access to any schools before 94, and today every child is in a school. So, you know, it depends on how one uses statistics. But I think it's good enough to say that we have big challenges in this country, and we should not be satisfied with the way we are. We should always be striving to do things better. We have problems with people who are in power, and we should not be satisfied with that. I think it's good enough to say that the only thing we must be careful about is not to say that therefore freedom is a bad thing, therefore human rights is a bad thing, therefore the achievements of having this constitution is actually worthless. I think we need to be very careful about that, because the attainment of freedom is one of the prides of the South African nation. And if we can undermine that, tomorrow you're going to have a dictator or a demagogue who will come in and say, oh, freedom is a bad thing, democracy is a bad thing. Let's put aside this whole thing and have a dictatorship and military rule, and then we will be able to get rid of all the corrupt people, put people in jail, do this, do that, and those sorts of things. And that can appeal to people, as it has in many other countries around the world. You have found that democracy has been overthrown by a dictator who promises heaven on earth. And so the way in which we do this thing, we must, yes, we must point out all the weaknesses, but we must also point out the great wonders of the achievement of democracy and freedom. I think those are the two things that must go hand in hand. That's the only point I'd like to make, Sebenzile.
Thank you, Mr. Musa. Mr. Swan, a parting shot from you in response to what Mr. Musa has just said, but also how do we build going forward?
As I said from the start, my concern was that we would lose what was already there. Because really, in many cases, the National Party and many other parties across Africa remove benefits that were already there. But if the question is what is to be done, my view is that 95% of our problem in South Africa is not the Constitution. No, not the Constitution. 95% of the problem is an HR problem. In other words, you elect and put into office the wrong cabinet, including the state president, including incompetent members of parliament, including incompetent mayors, including staff that are substandard across the civil service. So if we do not remove these people who are wrong in the public sector, whether they are elected politicians or employees, we will not solve anything. The Constitution is not going to solve anything because we have wrong people. And those wrong people have been put there because of criminal and corrupt motives, and they need to be removed. Thank you.
Let me thank you both for your time with us this morning. Certainly a fascinating conversation that we've had here and both of your contributions truly have been compelling. That was political analyst Sandile Swana, as well as UDF and former cabinet minister, founder member of the UDF and former cabinet minister Vali Musa on the line as we commemorate South Africa at 30 on this Freedom Day, as we think about the first election 30 years ago here on The Weekend View.
You can find SAFM Current Affairs on 104 to 107 nationwide. Our podcasts are available for download on all our digital platforms. SAFM, leading the conversation.